JG 1. Number 24B.
Okay, so we say, wow, boy, this is what I'm going through, all this suffering. And then that suffering appears at the point of the spirit, and I say, I'm going through all this chaos. I'm coming out, if I'm coming out of something, and now everything in my life is a crisis, I'm going through the suffering, everything is chemicalizing. Chemicalizing means two opposing forces are meeting. Usually we're not aware of what's going on. It's just a lot of hell going on in our life. And then at the point of mind, we say, it's just a lot of animal magnetism going on around me. And I don't know what to do, until finally the Christ comes and acts as the law of correction. Here we get at the point of mind, that law of correction that we saw on page 50, mind acts as the law of correction. And at this point, we start through the phase transition. Now the upward arrow of time comes, and slowly but surely, through the law of correction here at mind, we say, if we're bright enough, and finally we're going to be bright, it doesn't matter, the Christ here or there, here or now, here or after, somewhere, in some time, we're going to respond with some kind of brightness, because what the remnant is there. All the Christ is ground to powder was all that wasn't like itself. But each one has the mind which is God in us. As the mind seeks the mind in us and just grinds through all that dark, thick goo that's around the consciousness, and it gets down to the remnant, there is enlightenment in each one. And finally, at some time, in some place, eureka. The idea breaks. We don't know when, we don't know where, but it breaks. And then the minute it breaks, and we begin to say, oh, I see. I know why I'm going through all this suffering. I know why the world's all going through all this suffering. A new paradigm is breaking in. A higher order. I'm asked to see these things differently. I'm trying to see either I want this to happen in my life. I've been so stubborn to hang on to this relationship, or to keep figuring I've got to have this job, or I'm on the corporate climb and I'm going after money, 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 greed, 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 or I'm doing something, or I'm doing something. Something in your breaks and you say, oh, I do it. You know, there was that one movie not too long. It was called Regarding Henry. It had Harrison Ford in it. Just one film amongst many on these themes. You know how he was really into the quote-unquote corporate world, the big, sophisticated, high-polished suits, all the friends in the world he could have, plus the family. Just doing the thing that's in vogue in the corporate climb, eating in all the right places, driving all the right cars, flying on all the right airplanes to the right locations, enjoying the right things, just really enjoying life, until one day he goes out to the pharmacy to get something at the pharmacy, and a thief comes in and shoots him in the head. And he falls over and ends up in the hospital and has lost his memory, you see. Doesn't know who he is. And by help and therapy and kindness and love through the therapist and everything, he slowly comes back. First of all, he has amnesia, doesn't know who he is. He finally comes back, and he doesn't like what he sees. Doesn't like that. Was that me? Was I that corporate climber that was full of greed? And was I doing that to the wife? And, was a whole family around me suffering because of the way I was? Eureka. It took a bullet in the head to take eureka, but he did it. We don't need the bullet in the head, but it's something that's going to cause the eureka. And we're going to look around and say, is that really me? There's a quote that the drama teacher that I had in high school always said, it comes from philosophy or history somewhere, you may know who said it originally, Oh, the gifts the gods would give us if we could see ourselves as others see us. And I've always thought of that. Oh, the gifts the gods would give us if we could see ourselves as others see us. We just really don't know what the error is in our consciousness. Mrs. Eddy said, mortal mind is always ignorant of itself. And the thing is, we usually accuse the others of our fault. We're really convinced the other has a problem we do. They may, but just because we're reacting to their problem, say, that person is so full of personal sense, I can't stand them. Yeah, look at how awful they are. They walk around like they've got everything in the earth, and everybody follows them around like they're a little god, and whether it's a boss or the secretaries or whatever, and we say, this really turns me off. I can't stand it. Well, it's in us. If we begin to say, not react to personal sense in us, if we didn't have it in us and really secretly wish we were the one that everybody was looking up to and we were the one, you know, the boss was going to choose for the next promotion or something like that, and we let personal sense go in our life, the others may have it, but it doesn't bother us anymore. It's like Jesus, when the army came together, the army all fell back upon itself because there was nothing in Jesus to react to all that awful, ugly evil coming after him to hang him on the cross. They came and did what they had to do, but they fell back upon themselves. They were rebuked by his goodness. There was nothing in him to react to all the personal sense, you see. And so that should be the same with us. Personal sense comes but finds nothing in us. So our life continues to be happy. It's only if the personal sense in us reacts at the personal sense. It's our problem. We accuse the other of it, of our problems. And the reverse of it, we always know the other one's problem because they accuse us of their problem. Always. The other will say, you're full of personal sense, or you're no good because of this and this, and they're just telling us their problem. If they didn't tell us what the problem is, they wouldn't be concerned. They'd be off happily and leave it to the Christ to let us know what our problem is. So the arguing, accusing each other of different things, we're both guilty. The accuser's guilty and the other one's guilty. We all that. We're in it together. Nobody's self-righteous. That's why Jesus said the self-righteous man will never make it through heaven. He loved to talk to the sinners and all that. His reputation was the opposite of what he was, because all the sinners and the everything always knew they weren't good. They know when they're doing things that aren't so good, and they were a little bit more willing to be transformed than the self-righteous who always blamed everyone else. They were good, the halo was right, and the others are wrong. This is all here, do you see? It's how much when's Eureka going to break? It does, finally, where we say, okay, the problem's between me and God. It's between me and the Christ, the work out your own salvation. When we finally forget looking around and look to God and let it happen in our life, that's when the Eureka comes. We start, how does Mrs. Eddy say at this point? We cease the warfare. When she came into science, she ceased the warfare with others, and she began to let God happen in her life. So this is letting it happen. And when that happens, it's the enlightening power. We start going through the phase transition, where first of all, this acts then as the first degree. The law of correction is the first degree. It begins then to analyze. It begins that mind corrects. It sends us up again from through the first degree, analyzing, oh, it's just some false belief in our consciousness. It's usually the belief of reversal. So here the law of correction analyzes what the problem is, and we get it. We now know the problem within us. The problem is in us. We haven't accepted what's come to us. It's been analyzed in our consciousness. It's been exposed to us. We get it. Enlightenment begins to happen. See, the enlightening power starts working here as we see it, which is a power of mind. We let it manifest. The purification process of the second degree starts happening there at spirit. where we begin now at the second degree. Those human qualities begin to come into our life. We're much more humane. We don't have the qualities of self-justification. People start thinking we're much nicer than we used to be. We're not so self-righteous, so full of self-justification. More humanity comes in. The purification process is starting to set. The chemicalization is subsiding. The crisis is subsiding. The frustration is subsiding. The conflict is subsiding. And finally, we come into to the third degree. We're totally transformed. Everything that in us that resists the Christ has been transformed. The suffering stops, and we're finally in the third degree, and everything is okay.
Well, that works for that's on an individual level.
So on an individual, collective, and universal.
Okay, so when everybody's on a boat and the whole boat goes down, then everybody has the same.
Well, if everybody's on the boat and the whole boat goes down, they all have the same problem. That's to know their oneness with God, yes. It's an individual, collective, and universal. No individual is responsible for a collective problem or for a universal problem. You're all in it together, huh? It's just the point is, yeah, it's not mentality. It's not a question of any individual's responsibility whether the environment went wrong. It's that mentality when a storm happens, we say to ourselves, now what was I thinking for that storm to occur? Or what was I thinking for this to happen? It's not that. It's just that principle God is sweeping down the century. It's bringing what the Word is, the law of divine success mechanism, to everyone in the whole universe, including man, including all mankind. That whole law of the success mechanism is totally engaged everywhere and through love, and it's identified everywhere, and it's diversified, classified everywhere. Everyone's subject to the same success. It's only individualized to our situation of how it appears, but we're all in it together. So it comes to everyone, and everyone has the individual responsibility to respond to what's coming. So you said a boat going down, or in a sea and the boat going down, no individual caused the problem. We're all in it together, and therefore, but the individual has a responsibility to respond intelligently to the situation, huh? It wasn't any individual's fault.
No, I didn't mean that it was. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm asking is, in other words, if you get up in the morning and you think you're really doing your work and you're prepared and everything, mm-hmm. you go out in the world and you're caught in the same tidal wave as no one
sure.
else has done their work and you're washed ashore and everyone else.
Yeah.
What?
Well, see, first of all, I'll just get you in.
What's the question?
The question is, when the individual is okay and seems to be doing their work, we think we're okay, huh? We've polished the halo because we studied in the morning, huh? So we're pretty sure we're okay. But everybody else isn't okay. Why do we suffer in a situation when we are okay? Well, usually the belief on the human level is that the universal controls the individual, controls the collective, controls the individual. So it's only when one is on the side of God that the individual, one side on God is a majority. That's how Jesus in the storm could be the power, could be a transparency for the light to come to calm the storm. Because he was the individual consciousness that was transparent on that whole boat that calmed the storm. Yeah, he was in the storm with everyone else. And as Mrs. Eddy said, Jesus was without sin. And she said, yet he seemed to suffer for everyone's suffering, meaning those universals and collective beliefs. He was in the boat, and he was in the storm. And they had to go down and say, good master, come on up to the deck and calm the sea. Well, because his individual consciousness went on the side of God is a majority and calmed the universal and collective fears within that situation, and it calmed the thing. But he was suffering, so to speak, for the universal and collective beliefs. So he, sleeping downstairs, was okay. John?
I just saw that the premise of the boat going down with all the people was a wrong premise to start with. So a lot of mortal minds.
Yes.
Down.
Yeah, well, that, yeah.
Mind, spirit. The real man was not on the boat in the first place.
No, and that's what Jesus saw. But that takes, that's right, John. Thank
What's
you.
What's your question?
Well, it wasn't a question. He was just kind of underlining what I said. He said that he could see that that in reality what Jesus did, one on a side of God as a majority, that Jesus beheld in science the perfect man, the perfect situation, and that correct view heals the sick. Jesus didn't take in the universal and collective beliefs that made the boat go down. He understood that the gravitational force, the buoyancy force, the weather force, all those forces were working for you, not against you, which handled the belief that a boat could go down anyhow. So he took that standpoint. But he was in it, but he handled it, huh? So it isn't that, that's why we have to take that Christ standpoint, that Jesus beheld in sight the perfect man. Where sinner mortal man appears to mortals, where those that believe that there is a possibility for weather to work against them and that a storm can work against them, that the boat can sink, and that there's a laws of gravity that can pull it down. Right there he said, no, you're under the laws of matter. Like John says, you're going out from the effect to the cause. You're not reasoning correctly. You're reasoning from a problem to a solution, where Jesus reasoned correctly. From cause to effect in the science of mind, we begin with mind, which can only be understood through its idea and not through the opposite matter. So he reversed the situation and did the correct reasoning and healed it. That's our responsibility in the world today when we see that all hell seems to be letting loose in the universe, and the collective, especially through environmental crises with the species and all this. Well, all right, we seem to be suffering for somebody else's problem. And I think Diane was asking, well, if we vote in the wrong politician or something and we're taken down the bifurcation road of suffering, do we individually suffer? Well, the world suffers. It's up to us not to take that suffering in. See, that's where Mrs. Eddy says we must hold crime in check. We can't take that all in as a reality. Is if it looks like the world chose the road of Armageddon, one on God's side is a majority. She says if we were of one mind in this classroom, we could heal the world. Jesus had 12 disciples. Let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. This whole class is 12 disciples. This side is over.
Alternate
disciples. I'm just kidding. But let's say that he just had 12 disciples, huh? We're not many mighty, Paul said. Or 12 disciples. These are in reserve, huh? So the 12 disciples, which is, they said, we're not many mighty, but we're going to get the job done. And Mrs. Eddy said, you can always tell where truth leads by the fewness but faithfulness of the followers. So it's always the sense that a few, it's the more with less. It's a redundancy problem. And often in this work we say, thank goodness we don't have a lot. A lot just brings in a lot of people are going to chemicalize and say, I don't like this about what you're saying, or I don't like that about what you're saying, or you don't say it quite right at this time, and you should have said it sooner than you said it then. You get all this chemicalization going on. We don't need that in our work. We got to go forward. So it's really a blessing we can do. We can do more with less. We're protected. We don't need the flocks. I'd rather have a little class than a huge class, because it's the little that are responding to the idea that want to be there, rather than all those who aren't quite sure whether they want to be there and they're just testing the waters, you see. You don't. That's not what it's about. The response is that you can do more with less. It's always been you do more with less. And I see lately Billy Graham, he has a son up in the Seattle area, probably down around Olympia or something. And in one of our local papers not too long ago, he was coming through Seattle for one of his speeches. It wasn't one of these huge crusades that filled the kingdom. It was just a little talk here or there, and he's really there to meet his son. So just this little article came out in the paper, and he says, well, Billy, they said, what do you think about your life? And he says, well, it's okay. I love to serve God. But he said, the only mistake I made is that I made a big organization out of what I did. I wish I had kept it small. And I think of how we want to organize. We want to form schools. And the school wants to get everybody together to do this and that and the other thing. Human or an idea only has power if it organizes. How did Mrs. Eddy said? Organization only has an idea. Something only has power humanly, we think, if we have to organize it. That's not the teachings of Christian Science. The individual versus organization. The teaching of the Dorley Kappeler line is that the individual serves the collective idea. It doesn't be organized. Dorley said over and over, don't organize this idea. Don't form your quote-unquote schools. Don't form this and that. Stay with the individual. Put the accentuation there. Get it and let it serve the collective idea in its way. Each one can go out in our individual way and be the Christ consciousness. We don't need an organization behind us to do it. We'll say, well, there's the Kappeler Institute. Isn't that an organization? No, that's there just to get Max's books and tapes out. It's there to serve the idea. Our goal is that the individual serves the collective idea. Help the individual do it. Don't form another church. It's the science of the religion of the science of Christian Science. So we all get together as another church. So I said, let's not wait till next summer to come to a few enlightened teachers that are going to give us the next step forward. That's organization. At its worst, it's spiritualism. It's making, putting on some organization or someone's shoulder a sense that principle is turned into personality, and those personalities are now organized to take it forward. Dorley has a wonderful article somewhere about individuality versus organization in one of his books. I don't know which one it is. Or that one that I always give out in my introductory class where servants of the spirit, never prisoners of the organization. That's what we're about, huh? That's what we want to show. Put it on the individual. Let the individual's responding to God. The individual knows, oh, it's time to have a little group form around me if I live in Decatur. Oh, I'd like to get together the friends and we'll go over what we are reading together. Or in Los Angeles, oh, I'd like to get together a few friends. You can do that. But the work is really done at home, in consciousness. It's consciousness has power. Each one is serving the collective. That's where it's being done, you see. Don't organize this business. That has to do with how we help the universal problem, you see. We say everything's going to ruin. Our politicians have chosen the wrong point. They're taking us down the crisis road. They're not passing laws for the environment. The species are suffering. The woods are suffering. What can I do about it? I can't. It's just me. Let's organize. Let's get together this little group. That's fine. But no, our biggest work is in our laws. Go over them and over. Flood the universe with the law of the word vertical. Flood the universe with the law of the Christ vertical. Flood the universe with the law of Christianity. Flood the universe with the law of science. In our little room, in our home, just love. Mrs. Eddy said, I healed by love, love, love. Just love the universe, love the earth, love all mankind, let all that love pour forth. And with that individual Christ consciousness, we saw here, it has a universal blessing. Truth, life, and love. Truth, the Christ consciousness, which individualizes itself as our Christ consciousness. Love has a universal blessing. It does. We just have to know it and trust it. We have no other choice. There are not a snuff soapbox around. And anyhow, people are too busy to listen to us. And anyhow, they're convinced that their ismanology is right. Try to go preach Christian Science to someone. First of all, it has such a bad name in the world now because of they're the funny ones who don't go to doctors and have all the lawsuits. But thank goodness they don't listen to us. we'd be out on the soapbox preaching. We'd be out on the circuit. We'd be out running around like Johnny Appleseeds, wasting our time, rushing around smartly, thinking we were getting it done by taking this airplane there and that airplane here and this airplane there and that plane over there and the Herrick. The thing is, we get it done individually. Do we see? That's this law of truth, life, and love. And it handles just what you said, Sandy. It's a wonderful question about this law. How does the job get done? Does the individual suffer for the universal and collective beliefs? Yes, if it's on the human. No, if it's on the divine. And if it's on the divine, it accepts the law of truth, life, and love, the individual Christ consciousness that's the universal blessing right where you are at home with the family. It begins with the individual, Dorley says. It grows with the collective and goes with the universal. So we go forward home and see it individually, in the family, in the nations. We see it everywhere. We're so happy, huh? We chop wood, carry water happily because of this law. And we've got a big mission to do. Each one of us. Each one of us. It's a wonderful law, isn't it? It really is terrific.